Welcome to the Psychology World podcast. I'm Connor Whiteley, bringing you the psychology news, articles, and other interesting psychology-related articles. You can find the podcast notes and more interesting psychology-related things, and you can get your free 8 psychology book box set at connorwhiteley.net. Now let's get on to the show. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 151 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Con Whiteley. And today's episode is on what is bibliotherapy and what is the case for it, or something along like that, like variation. I've not quite decided on the final title yet, but this is an absolute brilliant podcast episode. Episode, because as the podcast host, I'm always trying to push the boundaries of like what we look at, and sometimes I come across absolutely fascinating stuff. And I'm sure from my voice you can tell how I'm just flat out excited about this, because it was such a brilliant podcast episode to actually research and look up, and I learned so much. And I really do think that this is actually quite about the opposite direction, because in psychology, thankfully, we're always pushing forward, we're always looking at new technologies, etc. But this podcast episode actually teaches us never forget where we came from. And sometimes the older technologies are just as worth revisiting. So cannot recommend this great podcast episode enough. And it is Friday, the 20th of May 2022 as I record this. So moving on to the psychology news section, we're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest, and there's some really good ones here today, as always. So the first one is, top performers don't always provide the best advice. If you want to learn a new skill, who are you going to ask for advice? Someone with a track record as a top performer would seem an obvious choice. Indeed, as the authors of a new paper in Psychological Science pointed out, Americans alone pay hundreds of millions of dollars each year, open quote, to connect them to icons, experts and industry rock stars who will teach them how to write novels, start businesses, play chess or barbecue briskets. And they pay these premiums because they naturally believe that the best advice comes from the best performers, close a quote. However, this new work suggests that it does not. And this I'm sort of have like two feelings about. Because they've obviously sometimes where of course it does pay to actually learn and learn from the best of the best. For example, they how to write novels, examples. That one is very much as an author myself of fiction and non-fiction. Well, the amount of how to write courses that are done by gurus and actually non-writers, I think, is absolutely hilarious and quite ridiculous. And then they pay, people sadly pay hundreds of dollars from people who actually don't know what they're talking about. And there's so many myths and everything, so I think that's really interesting, though. And on the outside, though, these are people who make themselves look like they're top performers and they make millions, etc. But if you actually dig into it and actually compare it to long-term professional vices, they're actually not that good. So very, very interesting. And this, I can really see the point of. So I think that the sort of amendment to this is, is that just because someone has a track record doesn't actually mean it's a very strong or solid track record, though. It's just something to bear in mind. So the second one is, we tend to see our political opponents as stupid rather than evil. And you can tell by my laughs at how funny this is. Okay, if we have strong political leanings, it's likely that we'll have similarly strong feelings about our opponents. We might think of them misguided or stupid. We might consider them self-serving or selfish. Or, worse of all, we might believe that they're actually evil. A new study published in Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin explores this question. Do we think our opponents are evil or just stupid? Whilst the common understanding is that liberals see conservatives as evil and conservatives see liberals as stupid, the team finds that whatever our political affiliations, we're more likely to see the other as unintelligent than immoral. And yeah, I completely agree though, because of course I'm one of them, and for the sake of this podcast I'm actually not going to say which side I'm on, but I completely agree that, because the political opponents who don't share my point of views, I don't think that they're evil. Are they silly, in my opinion? Definitely. And yeah, so I really do see like where this is like coming from though. When like at the end of the day, you know, we always have our own opinions and we need to respect it. And that's something that I'm very hot on though, because you might have a completely different political opinion like to me, but that doesn't make you like a bad person. It just means that you have a different perspective, and I want to like respect that. And to be honest, I actually want to hear it, because I'm always quite interested to hear that, like, where different people are coming from when it comes to politics. So, but the last one is, parenting Instagram accounts can make mothers feel supported, but also less competent. Adjusting to parenting can be difficult for many new parents, particularly when it comes to judging their own competence or knowing whether or not they're doing the right thing. Subsequently, many new parents seek advice from peers, family members, friends, and increasingly from social media. A study published in Acta Psychologica, which I think if I've pronounced it right, then that is such a brilliant name, examines the impact of parenting-related Instagram accounts on the mothers. It finds a mixed experience. Whilst mothers can feel supported by a community of fellow parents, they can also feel less competent when they're comparing themselves to others. And I think the biggest thing here, when it like comes to this, is that of course none of this is ever like official advice, so please don't take it as any. But as long as you're doing your best, and as long as you really are trying to be the best parent that you possibly can, then chances are you're actually going to be great and everything. And of course, the biggest thing about social media is, of course, everyone puts on their best moments. Instagram accounts, sure, some of it will be real. The vast majority of it will just be like polished stuff about what the Instagram user thinks is like the right thing though. So it's very much like a double-edged sword and a very fine like balancing act, because all of these Instagram accounts also don't show you the bad sides or their mistakes. So just be careful. Be careful though. And that goes for all social media. So I hope you enjoy the psychology news section. So let's move on to the personal update. So moving on to the personal update. This week has been like very busy, and I've been doing like tons of like different business pieces, but none of it much like say ecology based, because I'm still waiting to hear the feedback from my literature though. But that should be coming back like some point, because the person who is going to give me the like feedback, he's busy like marking. And I want to say though, to like any of you, it's like whether you're like a PhD student, something to do in like academia, and if you do marketing, I really do feel sorry like for you though, because I actually like said to the person that I think up to five I think would be quite interesting. But I think any more than that, marking academic papers when they're all answering the exact same question, I think would just get painful after like a while though, because I think that you would get some people who would write so professionally, so great. And I think from a marketer's perspective, that would just be brilliant, because it'd be quite an easy read, and that and the feedback wouldn't be like too much. But then you get people who, like me, who are very good at the information and the like knowledge, but maybe the academic writing isn't quite there yet, so that would be a bit more interesting in terms of like the feedback. And then you'll have the people who cannot write academically to save their life, which I really do like feel for, and I do understand, and that they don't have the like information there. So basically I really do feel for anyone who does marking. I admire you. I cannot do it myself, so yes, that is definitely something that I will never ever do, even though I'll probably like come on here in like 5 years time and like I say that I've like done some marking. But I just like remembered that I've also sorted out my like final year project for like next year, so I'll be focusing a bit more on like cognitive psychology again though. And it's the same people who I've been doing my placement year with, so I really am looking forward to it, because they're also like great people, and I really am like looking forward to working like with them again. So I won't actually go into it in like too much depth, but I most probably will talk about it like next week though. But it's to do with like cognition and something to do with like memory enhancement, so that will be really really interesting to like look at. Plus I get to use an EEG, which I really am looking forward to though. forward to it. But the only thing that I don't like about EEGs is that if you're a like a participant under that electrolyte gel, I think that's like what it's called, where that you have to like inject into people's hair. Yeah, that really does turn like sticky and just hard and just horrible after like a while. So make sure that you like wash it out. Definitely like learn that the hard way. So as always, I always love to hear your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me, ConnorWiley@ConnorWiley.net. You can always leave a comment on the show notes at ConnorWiley.net/podcast. And you can always tweet me on Twitter at SciFiWiley. I always love to hear from all of you because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And today's episode has been sponsored by Formulation in Psychotherapy. So this is an absolute brilliant podcast sponsor for today's episode because part of a bibliotherapy actually it talks against formulation. I feel like some of it though, but formulation is where mental health and psychotherapy should be like going there rather, because it's all about tailor making of their individual therapy to the individual's needs, desires and wants. So that's really, really important. And if you're going into clinical psychology, then you absolutely have to understand what formulation is. So if you want a really easy to understand in engaging book that actually goes into like great depth about formulation in psychotherapy, then you've got to check out this absolutely brilliant book. So that's Formulation in Psychotherapy, available from all major ebook retailers, and you can get the paperback and hardback version from Amazon at your local bookstore or local library if you request it. But if you didn't want to buy a book, but you still wanting to give the podcast be like one-time support, then you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/ConnorWiley. So that's enough of the personal update. Let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be looking at what is the case for bibliotherapy. So this is just such a brilliant episode. But I'm actually just going to like dive into it. This is just wow. So why even look at a bibliotherapy? And before I explain what bibliotherapy is, I want to mention first why people are getting interested in exploring such an old approach to therapy. And in many it comes down to, but when we're looking for mental health interventions, we are always looking for approaches that are scalable, meaning that we need interventions that can be provided effectively to a lot of people at the same time, and ideally at a low cost. There are lots of reasons why scalability is important. For example, economic reasons are very important, especially when the future of many economies look negative for the foreseeable future, which means that government cutbacks are inevitable. Other factors are moral, as well as mental health is a global health problem, and there are nowhere near enough mental health practitioners to provide individual treatment to everyone who needs it. Additionally, when people start to think about scalability, the argument always tends to turn towards newer technologies, such as guided apps, or using artificial intelligence to provide people with interactions like those are given by a therapist. And personally speaking, like as I've mentioned on other like podcasts, well, like this year I've been on my like say ecology placement year, and some of the work that I actually like had to do were like towards the side of it. I was actually investigating effectiveness of mobile and mental health apps. As I will note that the next thing that I'm about to say is very, very valid from personal experience. However, whilst these technologies are very exciting, there is a very real risk that the appeal of the novelty does in fact tend to overshadow the usefulness of older technologies, and this is where bibliotherapy comes in. What is bibliotherapy? In its most basic form, bibliotherapy is a book therapy where clients are given a specialised workbook to work through their difficulties and improve their mental health. Originally, this was started in 1918 by David Burns, who published a book that introduced readers to cognitive behavioural therapy for the treatment of depression. Then, over the decades, there has been other guided books published that produced at CBT form a range of conditions, and newer types of therapy too. For example, there were books for dialectical behavioural therapy and acceptance and commitment therapy, resulting in bibliotherapy being a realistically available treatment option for a lot of people. What is the case for bibliotherapy? Nonetheless, despite the amount of research highlighting the effectiveness of bibliotherapy, it hasn't really been adopted. For instance, there were some very rigorous studies conducted in 1980 where bibliotherapy, or was it, used as the control group compared to more intensive forms of therapy. But there was a massive problem for the researchers. The bibliotherapy group did just as well as the more inattentive group of participants. Now, well, this wasn't because the intensive therapies were bad, it was because the bibliotherapy was so good. Then other studies have confirmed this in more recently, like a meta-analysis from 2004 compared to the effects of cognitive bibliotherapy for depression and in-person cognitive behavioural therapy. The results showed that bibliotherapy was just as good as the in-person therapy. As well, the authors noted that there was no additional benefit to in-person therapy compared to bibliotherapy. Now, to me, that's just absolutely amazing, because I know from my police psychology book forms of the cognitive interview can be highly effective that way. But until now, I hadn't connected book forms to a therapy, and this just shows the importance of always trying to push the boundaries of what we are currently doing as psychologists. Furthermore, generally speaking, the vast majority of our research into bibliotherapy has highlighted its positive effects. Effects are with the only main source of a disagreement being the size and source of these effects. Therefore, some researchers have proposed that giving clients with common mental health conditions an appropriate book with some but not much supervision can be just as effective as individual psychotherapy. Now, before we go on, let's just imagine what this claim would actually mean for mental health services, because instead of having a maximum capacity that you cannot go over whatsoever, this has the potential to free you up, because if you're full up and then 30 people come at you with mild depression, normally you would have to just send them away or sign them up to a waiting list, that they weren't going to get treated and their mental health condition would simply get worse. But now, you can actually start treating them, even though you're at full capacity. So it's just something to think about. And that is just absolutely brilliant, in my opinion. Of course, there will always have to be some details worked out. For example, what mental health conditions does A apply to? And as I mentioned earlier, but there is thankfully a good case for mild depression, but it wouldn't be as effective for more severe conditions. Then you could question precisely how close is a bibliotherapy compared to individual therapy in effectiveness, amongst other questions. However, even with these questions, I think that it's safe to say that a bibliotherapy could transform mental health services. Another three possible implications. Additionally, bibliotherapy does have some other implications for mental health, which I do want to talk about now. Firstly, bibliotherapy could be a great control group, or at least an option to become a PM in the evaluation of new technologies, due to new technologies are often compared to individual therapies because they tend to be more cost effective and scalable. However, those two comparisons aren't always the most important comparison points, because the books are relatively cheap, so it almost destroys the whole cost effective argument. Therefore, the most important question for these new technologies aren't are they better than a therapist, but are they better than a book? And I definitely think that that adds a new interpretation that the pen is mightier than the sword. Secondly, it could make us slightly more questioning of highly personalised forms of psychotherapy, since if we want to provide mental health care for lots of people, having it manualised is very helpful, as it helps with scalability. Then it is even better if we can just give the client the manual to the therapy itself. Personally, I was rather shocked when I first read that, because if you've listened to the podcast for a while, then you know that I'm a massive supporter of formulation, as this area covers personalised therapies. But now I believe it's that there is room for both. There is room for manualised therapies for the more mild mental health conditions when it is effective, but personalised therapies are needed for when bibliotherapy and others fail to be effective. So there is room for both, in my opinion. Finally, if you're interested in addressing the global mental health crisis, then books are extremely useful because they're cheap and they're easy to distribute, and they are very effective. Therefore, this is definitely an option we could investigate more and leverage. Conclusion. Of course, bibliotherapy is definitely not a cure-all type of therapy, and there are some limitations. Yet, bibliotherapy is supported by a lot of evidence. But of course, a lot more is needed if bibliotherapy is ever going to go into the mainstream. As well as there is still the universality problem that greatly limits bibliotherapy on the global stage. For bibliotherapy to work, it needs people who are able to read, and thankfully tons of people around the world can read and write. But the global literacy rate is only around 85%, and in most developing countries where the therapy is needed most, it is at closer to 60 to 70%. So there is a lot of people in a possible need that cannot use bibliotherapy in the slightest. So but to wrap up today's episode, I think that there is so much great potential for bibliotherapy because of the current research and the scalability of it. Bibliotherapy does have the potential to help tons of people who currently don't receive any type of treatment. So the future could be very bright indeed, especially if we look at both newer and older forms of technology. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and that you got some out of it. I really did, and I really do enjoy looking at these newer forms of psychotherapy. If you know someone who would enjoy today's episode, then definitely share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you wonderful people help us spread the word about the podcast. And definitely check out Formulation in Psychotherapy. It's a great book that I cannot recommend enough. Available in all of the usual places. But if you do want to buy a book, then definitely check out Buy Me a Coffee at buymeacoffee.com/Conor Whiteley. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to see the show notes, then please go to conorwhiteley.net. And if you want a free 8-book psychology box set, then please go to conorwhiteley.net. Have a great day, and I'll see you next time.